Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by Harry's. Harry's is so confident in the quality of their blades, they want you to try their shave set for free. You heard that right. Just cover shipping when you sign up. Plus, as a special offer for fans of the show, go to harrys.com right now and enter code CAMPFIRE at checkout to get a post-shave balm, also free. That's harrys.com, code CAMPFIRE. Thanks, Harry's. Jim Harold's Campfire is also brought to you by HelloFresh.com. We thank them so much for their support. Receive $35 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code CAMPFIRE35. Again, that's CAMPFIRE35. Thanks, HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to our gathering tonight. Here we share stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things. Sit back, relax, and warm yourself by Jim Harold's Campfire.
Welcome to the campfire. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. And I think we have another great show in store of true supernatural stories, ghosts and otherwise. First, I have a big favor to ask. You know, podcasting is becoming incredibly popular these days, which is great for us on one hand. On the other hand, there are always new podcasts coming out, kind of the new shiny object, and sometimes shows that have been in for the long haul and have done hundreds of episodes. Well, you know, if you look at the charts, they tend to get pushed back a little bit because there's new subscribers to the new shiny object out there. And a lot of these big companies are getting into podcasting these days. So, you know, people like me, independents, are always fighting the good fight and trying to stand up for the independent podcaster and keep bringing you the content that you love. So I have a big favor to ask, and there's no money involved. This is particularly people who listen on an iPad, an iPhone, or iTunes. If you could make sure that, first of all, you're subscribing to the podcast on your devices, and you just go over to the podcast app and look up Jim Harold's Campfire, and this goes for the Paranormal Podcast, too, if you're listening to that show, and you search for it, and you hit subscribe. So make sure you're subscribed. That way you always get to get all the episodes, and that helps us as well. And then secondly, please take time to rate and review the podcast. Give it hopefully a 4 or 5 star review and write a couple of sentences about why you enjoy the show. You know, again, these huge companies getting into this, they've got these massive marketing budgets. They can cross promote on these big shows and do all these things. And then you got independents like Jim. But I'm in it. You know, I've seen them come and I've seen them go, and I'm not giving up, but I need your help. So if you're on iTunes, iPad, or iPhone, go over and rate and review and make sure you're subscribed. It helps us more than you ever know. So thank you for that. And then the second thing I was going to say is some people over in our virtual campfire Facebook group were asking about my own experiences. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that a little later in the show. But first, we're going to have some great campfire stories from our community. And here they are. Next up on the campfire is Justin. Now, he's going to tell us about a time in his childhood when he had an honest-to-goodness poltergeist at his family home. And not only did that happen, I think it's inspired him a little bit in some of the things that he's doing today. Justin, welcome to the program, and please tell us what happened.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It started when I was 8 years old in the early 1980s, and my family had moved into a pretty big five-bedroom Victorian property, about 100 or so years old. And from the very, very first night that they moved in, straight away we had some really strange things. It started pretty mildly, really. We started with rooms, one particular room, my bedroom, in fact, becoming freezing cold. And we'd have the heating on. It'd be, pretty warm outside, and it'd still be absolutely freezing cold in my room. From the very first night, my mum had a bit of an uneasy feeling about the house. Bearing in mind, this should have been a happy occasion, but she, from the very first night, she kept myself and my two younger brothers in one room because of a feeling that she had. Now, over the course of around about 7-8 weeks, we had a range of poltergeist activity beginning to occur. It would start with objects moving and the TV changing channels on its own. And then we had things becoming a little bit stranger. We obviously had, like I said, at the time I had two younger brothers. I was about 3-5 years old. And my parents would leave the house, go to the shops and lock up. And they would find on their return that all of my brother's toys would be strewn all around the house and including on top of things like wardrobes. Yeah. And they'd usually kind of put these things away in the kind of toy box and come back to find them all over the house. Again, no sign of nobody had been inside the house. It's completely locked up. That would happen on a regular occurrence. And, objects would move across the mantelpiece of our fireplace on its own. And on one quite regular occasion, we had a the wall in our kitchen at one point would be shook, banged really hard and really aggressively. Now, my parents are kind of, they're kind of hardworking people. They didn't really understand what was going on. They're not particularly spiritual in any way. They're not, they had no idea particularly what was going on, and they kept a lot away from me and my two brothers. I'd experienced some things, but the bulk of the really violent activity they kind of kept from us quite a lot, and only told us as we became 16, 17, 18 years old. And like I said, this time when the wall would be kind of pounded and hammered from one side, my mum, who really had no idea what was going on, she would become really angry. She wouldn't be terrified. She'd just get, really quite annoyed by this thing. And she would start swearing right back at it, telling it to stop. And on some occasions when she would, go all out and just swear right back and it would stop. Just immediately, just straight away, to stop. and for years, and I've always been kind of amused by the fact that, only my mum could stop a poltergeist in its tracks and scare the poltergeist to actually stop him banging on walls. And like I said, this came on for a couple of months. It's pretty stereotypical kind of poltergeist activity in that we had a number of children. It might throw things or move objects around and scatter things around and bang on walls. And we really didn't have any idea what was going on. I think my parents were pretty bemused. They confused. They just found it quite funny in a way because they really didn't have any idea what was going on. Anyway, as they started to get set into the house over the next couple of months, the previous owner of the house came round, and she was interested to see what they'd got up to. And my parents were pretty embarrassed, to be honest. They'd kind of knocked down walls and was repainting and those kinds of things. And as she was shown around the house and was interested in what my parents were doing. And then my parents didn't mention about the poltergeist activity and things like that, because you wouldn't. It didn't really come into any kind of conversation. And just before she left, she turned around to my parents and she said, you've been having some strange things happen here, haven't you? And my mum and dad really didn't know what to say. They kind of looked at each other and kind of, well, she said, no, I know you've been having some strange things here happen. And, she says, okay, it's Martin. It's okay. He's come with me now. You'll have no more problems. Now, Martin obviously was her husband, and Martin actually died in a motorcycle accident a couple of months beforehand, and that was the reason why she left the property, because of all the memories. And as she left, she left to go back to live in Oxford, and from that day on, nothing else happened. The poltergeist activity stopped dead. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And Yeah, and like I say, nothing else happened after that day that she came around and had a look around. Now, you know, it kind of ties it up nicely in that you might believe that, you know, for some strange reason, the spirit of her husband actually came back to his home to find his wife wasn't there, was basically kicking up a fuss, wanting to know where his wife was. And that's how I kind of, I've liked to seen it. It looked interesting, very strange. And that basically got me hooked into the paranormal from that day on.
Go ahead.
No, it's just saying from that day on, I got interested in the paranormal and started reading up more and more, as you do when you're a kid. And as a teenager, it kind of stayed with me. All these kind of little incidents just stayed with me, all these questions that I had. And I started joining organizations, and now I have a wife and children of my own. And as I got older, I then decided to become a paranormal investigator because it just, that experience stayed with me from the age of 8 years old.
Now, it's interesting. Let me ask your opinion about something. Now, we've done shows on poltergeist before. We had great guests years ago, Michael Clarkson, who wrote a whole book about poltergeist, and he's kind of this hard-boiled journalist who turned into a believer in the activity.
Yeah,
he tended to think that it was more kind of children and adolescent energy that people were seeing. Now in this case, you had that, but you also had this person who had passed and the loved one who came and said, come on now. So do you think it's possible that this husband was somehow harnessing the children's power to manifest itself? I mean, what do you think was mechanically going on?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of strange. Ordinarily, you see a lot of poltergeist cases have adolescent children, you know, teenagers who, and obviously the theory is that all of this, the energy of the children and has enough impact. Now, I was quite young, really. I was only 8. And like I said, my two brothers were only 5 and 3-4 years old. So, you know, I think, if anything, it might, you know, the oldest one is probably me. And whether I kind of gave any energy to this thing, I really don't know. You know, it might have been just good timing, you know, that this, if it was the spirit of this husband, that the fact that he's able to get the, you know, the energy of myself and two brothers to kind of give it the kind of the power to do those kinds of things. It's a really kind of interesting this case, and it just kind of always makes me kind of wonder whether me and my two brothers had any kind of impact on that actually happening and that occurring.
Well, it's certainly a fascinating story. Now, do you have a website or something where people can learn more about your work on the paranormal these days?
Yeah, well, I usually do a little blog, and as an investigator, I'm really skeptical. You know, you think I'd be a believer, but actually, I'm very skeptical with a lot of paranormal cases. So my blog is really a kind of the skeptical approach to the paranormal, and it's called theforsakenclub.com. So you can have a little look at that, and you can hear my take on paranormal investigating and use of equipment and things like that, because that's the area I kind of really like to go down. Because I've always tried to have a skeptical approach, even with those experiences as a kid.
Well, Justin, thank you so much for joining us today on The Campfire.
No problem.
Next up on The Campfire is Michelle from Virginia. She's been listening for a few months. And she's a Plus Club member, so we thank her for that. That's a way to support us that makes it possible to do what we do, so we appreciate it. And she has a story about grandparents, something that her and her daughter have both experienced, and a UFO. I can't wait to see how this all ties together. Michelle, welcome to the program. Thank you for your support, and tell us what happened.
Okay, Jim. Thank you for having me. I have two short stories to tell. One is my daughter's story, and one is my own. Both center around newborn babies born into the family.
Mm-hmm.
My my granddaughters, to be exact. The first one is, my father, he passed away in 2006 here in Virginia at his home. And then exactly 1 year later to the day, we were bringing my granddaughter home from the hospital. At the time, my daughter lived in South Carolina, so about 6 months after the baby was born, my daughter brought the baby in for a visit.
Right.
And took her to my mother's home to let, them visit for the first time. So if you can imagine the home with an above-ground basement entrance, you walk in with a flight of stairs facing you, and there's about 18 steps going up, and at the top of the stairs, to your right, is your living room, which is where my father passed away, and to the left is the dining room, and beyond that is the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
It is an open floor plan.
Okay.
Okay, so that night, as my mother was meeting her great-granddaughter for the first time, my daughter heard footsteps coming up the stairs, and she said, my father walked in, walked over to where she was at the kitchen table, looked down at the baby, looked at her and smiled, and walked back over and walked back down the stairs.
Huh. Wow.
My daughter called me immediately after she got home and told me the story. And I asked her if she mentioned it to my mother, who also was sitting there. And she said no, she did not want to upset my mother. So later that night, I called my mother and told her the story and asked if she saw anything. She said no, but she heard the footsteps.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Okay, and the next one is my own story, and it also centers around my newest grandbaby, which actually just happened here recently.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. But my story is, of course, of the newest granddaughter. She was born here just in April of this year. My mother had not seen her until about a month ago, and I was babysitting her, and my husband and myself decided to ride over to take the baby for a visit. My mother lives up a long hill. Before you get to that hill is a curve. Well, as we rounded the curve, in the sky, you could see a UFO. It was as big as, I would think, probably about as big as a school bus.
Wow.
Yeah. But it reminded you of the Northern Star. So we were just mesmerized by the sight. We came to my mother's house, and I told my husband to keep driving and let's see what it does. So we did. My grandfather, before he passed away, lived about a mile on past my mother. And right when we got to my grandfather's, former home, the UFO disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And so we turned in my grandfather's driveway and drove back to my mother's. And we went in, and my eyes immediately gravitated toward my grandfather. He crocheted in his later years.
Right.
And my eyes just went straight for an Afghan that he had crocheted there. And I could just feel his presence, just like I have never felt a presence like that in my life. And I just felt like that he was with us and welcoming the new baby.
That is so neat. That is so neat. What a story. I mean, that is incredible to me. And the thing that you have this succession of grandparents. Why do you think that is? What do you think? I mean, do you have a theory as to all of this?
No, other than, you know, they were just there. They wanted to welcome them babies.
That's pretty neat. Well, thank you so much for calling tonight. I really appreciate it, Michelle, and thank you for listening to The Campfire.
Thank you for having me, Jim.
Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by Harry's, and I am so glad they are back because they do have the best razor blades out there on the market. I love shaving with them. I particularly love that weighted ergonomic handle that they have. It just has the feeling of heft and quality. I love the convenience. I love the fact that I don't have to go to a drugstore and wait for some guy with 27 keys on his belt to dig out the razor blades. They come right to my home, and the price is great. I mean, what's not to love about Harry's? Because for decades, the big razor companies have relentlessly increased prices and reaped huge profits at the expense of their customers. So Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys who were fed up with getting ripped off, started Harry's to fix shaving. Now, they knew that there was only one way to ensure quality. So they bought their own factory. And by taking less profit and selling directly to you over the internet, well, Harry's offers their blades at half the price, just $2 a blade compared to the four or more you'll pay at the drugstore. And they come right to your house, which is fantastic. And as I said, quality, quality, quality. Harry's razors include everything you need for a close, comfortable shave, the weighted ergonomic handle I told you about, the five precision engineered blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering gel, and a travel blade cover. You get all this, you get it delivered to your home, and not only that, I'm going to tell you about the best offer that we've ever had for Harry's. It is fantastic. Harry's is so confident in the quality of their blades, they want you to try their shave set for free. You heard that right. Just cover shipping when you sign up. Plus, as a special offer for fans of the show, go to harrys.com right now and enter code CAMPFIRE at checkout to get a post-shave balm also free. That's harrys.com, code CAMPFIRE. You're going to love the convenience. You're going to love the quality. You're going to love Harry's. Thanks, harrys.com. Our next caller up on The Campfire is Janelle from Missouri. And Janelle, like me, used to work at a radio station, and some strangeness ensued, and she's going to tell us about it. Janelle, welcome to the program, and tell us what happened.
Oh, not a problem. Thanks for having me. So the radio station, rather, that I worked at is housed in an old theater.
Cool.
And the theater opened in the 40s. And when I was growing up, I used to hear stories about people actually dying in the theater, having accidents and things like that. Yeah. And one of the stories that I heard was that a man was like up in the scaffolding and the lighting and had tripped and gotten tangled up in ropes and things and accidentally hanged. And so I had always heard my whole life these, you know, crazy little scary stories about this building. And when I finished college, I went to work there in the business office. And one of my jobs was to take the advertising contracts, the paper contracts, and scan them into our computer system. And the system that we used to scan them in was conveniently located in the basement. And so I would have to carry stacks of contracts down to the basement every day. And I would, on my first trip, take a cup of coffee and then a stack of contracts, and I would go back up and bring a couple more trips down. But it only took a few minutes. And one morning, I took my coffee down and sat it down and brought a few more contracts down. And when I reached for my coffee, it wasn't just cold. It was ice cold.
Ooh.
Like it was cold, like an iced coffee. And I had just poured it like 3 or 4 minutes before.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah. And I thought, trying to rationalize it. I was like, well, maybe I've been down here longer than I thought I was. You know, it just sat there longer than I thought, you know, trying to rationalize it away. And this happened 3 or 4 mornings in a row. So I finally got up the courage to ask someone else. I was telling them about what happened, and her name was Denise. And she said, oh, well, that's just the ghost. And I'm thinking to myself, that would have been great to tell me before I spent hours down there by myself. And I didn't really, you know, I wasn't sure I believed her at first. And she told me, the next time you go down and take your coffee, just tell whoever's there to leave you alone, and she'll stop. And she didn't know her name, but somehow she had the feeling that this was a female ghost. So the next time I went down with coffee, I sat my cup down and I started back up the stairs, and I turned around and just to this empty room. And even though I felt crazy, I was saying, okay, I don't know who you are. I'm not going to bother you. If you don't bother me, just please don't make my coffee cold. Please don't do anything to me, and I'll leave you alone. And I felt ridiculous, but I never had my coffee go cold ever again. Nothing else ever happened in the basement after I said that. So that kind of convinced me that there really was something there. And all I had to do was ask it to leave me alone. And it seemed to work. It never happened again.
You know, it's one
and
of those
other
things...
people had.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you finish your thought and then I'll tell you what I was thinking.
Oh, I was just going to say, I know that other people that had worked in the same department as myself had some, you know, similar experiences in that particular room. So I know it wasn't just me. And I know that when I asked it to stop, it did. So that made me feel like there really was something there.
You know, it's one of those things. I got to be honest that I've heard other people say the same thing, that they've encountered something and they've said, hey, go away. And it's gone away. I think that is so cool. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea, if there wasn't anything mean, or you didn't have to be nasty or provoke it or anything. You just had to say, hey, you know, kind of leave me alone. That is so cool.
Yeah. And that's exactly what I did. And there were other things that happened. Like, we actually housed 4 stations, and 2 of them were upstairs in what used to be the projection area, when it was a movie theater. And we would schedule the commercials, and at the end of the day, we would take the schedule for the next day on these kind of metal ring things on paper and hang them on the doorknob for each of the studios.
Right.
And one of the studios upstairs in particular, no one would be up there. It would be completely empty, and the door would be completely latched. And you could hang the schedule and turn to leave, and you could hear that door unlatch and it would swing open, and you could pull it back closed again, and it would unlatch and swing open again. And it would just keep doing it until you just gave up and left. But it wasn't a matter of it just not being loud. Like, you could hear the latch undo and the door open. And that was very frequent.
So cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I think that's such a cool story. Having worked in radio previously, I love radio stations. I love like little stories and lore around radio stations. And Janelle, thank you so much for being a part of the campfire tonight.
Oh, not a problem. Thank you so much.
Mike is on the line from Hawaii. I'm envious. I'm looking out at the snow and ice here in Ohio. But hey, you make your choice in life and you live with the consequences. But anyway, Mike has been very smart and he lives in Hawaii, but he has a story about something strange that happened when he was hiking as a child. Mike, welcome to the program, and please tell us what happened.
Thanks for having me, Jim. well, I live in Aiea Heights. Kind of a rural area that's at the top of a mountain, not too far away from where I live, is a heiau. And a heiau is sort of a sacred place that the ancient Hawaiians used to use. And it's part of a national park. At the top of the national park is a four what we call the Four Loop Trail. It's actually a 4-mile trail that circles around the mountain. And as a child, my cousin and I used to walk up to the Heiau, walk through the park, and make it to the top of the park to the Four Loop Trail. It was mostly out of boredom. You know, it was the summer. So we would walk on the trail for a little while. And this was a sort of a routine thing. We did this sort of every day. When we got to the top, when we were walking on the trail, things seemed a little different. It was a lot colder, but there was no wind. And the environment seemed to have changed somehow. It's very green up there. However, everything seemed a little different. There seemed to be more rocky areas. And it really looked a lot different from what we normally see. And so my cousin and I were walking along, and we're just feeling really uncomfortable. Like, there's this real feeling of dread in both of us, and we don't understand why. And it's very still. Everything is very still. There's no wind, but it's very cold at the same time. So finally, my cousin and I stop because we don't recognize anything. It's very cold. We're feeling very uncomfortable. And my cousin looks at me and he says, "Maybe we should leave." Now, There is no one else on the trail. It's completely empty. We walked in there for about half an hour. We didn't see anyone else. And this is a very popular trail. People, like tourists, are always going up there. Locals are always going up there. But this whole time, the half an hour we walked in, there's no one there. So my cousin says to me, "Maybe we should leave." And this is the creepiest part. All of a sudden, a little girl giggles, and it's very loud. And we're at a turn in the trail, and we could see very far ahead from this turn. It was sort of a U-turn, and a little girl giggles out loud, and it was incredibly loud. It filled up the whole area. Huh, yeah,
that's weird.
Yeah. And there's no one, keep in mind, there's no one else there. And she giggles out loud. It fills up the whole area. And my cousin and I look at each other, and we started running. We started running back. And here's the strangest part. And the little girl laughing was the strange part. But as we're running back, the wind suddenly picks up. It's just blasting everywhere. And I'm looking up above, and the trees are just going crazy, and I swear that I could hear voices in the trees. Like there are voices in the trees basically telling us to get out. Amidst all the creaking from the wind, I could hear voices in the trees telling us to get out. So my cousin and I are running, and my cousin is an athlete. He was a football player. But I kept up with him the whole time. It must have been the adrenaline. But I kept up with him running the whole time until we got out of there. And we ran all the way down the hill to our house. We didn't stop running. We ran through the park, which is a fairly long. It's about a mile up. And we ran about half a mile down to our house. And for the rest of the summer, we never went back to the Heiau or the park. Or the Four Loop Trail. We never went back because we were just so freaked out. We went there so many times, and nothing like this ever happened. So the park itself is sort of famous because of the Heiau up there. Now, my house is located on something called the Night Marcher Trail. And the Night Marchers are sort of the spirits of the ancient Hawaiians who travel up to certain holy areas. So it's a very holy place up there for the ancient Hawaiians. And I don't know if that had anything to do with what happened, but yeah, nevertheless, that was an experience that I will never forget from my childhood. And I've had a whole bunch of other hiking stories. But this was sort of the very first one that's sort of preventing me from hiking anytime in the future. And I've had many others. And there's a reason why I don't go hiking anymore, because of all the experience. And I suppose I could talk about it in the future. Now, but this is the very first experience.
Now, what do you think is going on? I mean, why do you think it's when you're hiking? What do you think you're encountering?
Well, I think it's definitely have to do with the spirits of the ancient Hawaiians. I think it's definitely have to do with that. They are so prevalent everywhere. But that experience, when I was a child, I'm getting a feeling that, yeah, it definitely had to do with ancient Hawaiian spirits, because of when we were running out, mm-hmm. And the wind started picking up, it was so intense, it was so powerful, that there had to be something influencing the environment. And plus, I heard the voices telling me to get out in the trees, sort of, and they were just going wild from the wind. And there was no wind when we were walking before. So, like, when we were walking into the heiau, and there was no wind. So it had to be something so powerful that it could affect the environment. And the only thing I could think of is that, yeah, it had to be the spirits of the ancient Hawaiians that sort of been prevalent in the area since ancient times. So this is the only thing I can think of, because I can't think of anything else. So.
Well, I'll tell you, it is chilling. And when you think that you're connecting to these ancient spirits, that is really something else. And Mike, we're looking forward to hearing your future stories. And I'd like to thank you for being a caller all the way from Hawaii. So next time you have an exceptionally beautiful day and you're looking out and there's the ocean, think of me freezing. Thanks a lot, Mike.
Thank you.
Next up on the campfire is Teresa from the Chicago area. A great city. Just was there last summer, during the summer. A cool place. I'd been there before. Didn't really get to look around this time. I did. Went to Harry Carey's Sports Bar, which was a lot of fun. Well, Teresa's not here to talk sports. She's here to talk about a couple of stories. In fact, she's a former Ohioan as well, as I am. So this first story, I understand, is from your time in Ohio about a coworker of yours named Joe. Welcome to the story. Welcome to the show, Teresa. And please tell us your story.
Okay. So when I lived in Ohio, I worked with Joe, and Joe was pretty down to earth. I really liked him and we got along really well. But at one point we shared an office, and at one point he seemed pretty, you know, just like things just didn't seem right. And so a little bit later when we were having lunch, one day he said, when he saw nobody else was around, he said, something bad has happened, and I've had an experience I just don't know what to make sense of or how to make sense of. And he told me that about a week before, he was sound asleep, and all of a sudden he was awakened by this woman's scream, you know, just a horrible scream. And he woke up, and the clock said 2:14 in the morning, and his wife woke up. She heard it too. And they went, and their house was kind of like, it wasn't close to other houses. They went all through the house. They checked their children were both sleeping. They went outside. They didn't see anybody. There was nothing. It was just total silence, but they both heard this horrendous scream. Well, a few days later, he found out, I think it was a cousin of his. I know it was someone whom they had spent, you know, had been troubled, and they had spent time trying to reach out to her and help her, but she had committed suicide, and she had died at around the time that they heard that scream.
Oh, my.
So it was pretty, didn't know what to make of it, but it was pretty tragic, and, you know, it gave me the chills. And always when I even think of it, it gives me the chills.
Yeah, that is something that would absolutely, absolutely give you the chills. That idea of screaming and then that sad happening, that is frightening.
Yeah, so that's the first story. The other story was that when I lived in Ohio, you know, I lost my mother early. My mother died when I was 16.
Oh.
And I went to college there in Ohio, and I made friends with this woman. Her name is Becky, and mm-hmm. Becky is about 14 years older than I, and we became like very good friends, and she mm-hmm. was almost like a second mother. She's just incredibly good friend. I mean, best friend I ever had. You know, we would talk for hours. We'd go out to friendlies and talk for hours, and when I moved to Illinois, we would email each other back
right.
and forth every night.
Right.
And she came out to Chicago a couple of times, and I, you know, and we did things. Well, unfortunately, she got a brain tumor, and she died. And after, and that was very hard, and after she died, her husband just wouldn't even, you know, he wouldn't return emails, he wouldn't talk to me, you know, it's like for months, you know, I wouldn't, and it was weird, I know it sounds weird, but it made me feel as if I weren't that important to her.
I can understand that, you feel like you're kind of shut out, you know, you lost your
yeah.
friend. But it would be nice to probably talk about remembrance and grieve and all of these things and not to have that. Yeah, that would be a little disconcerting, I would think.
I appreciate you understanding it. So one day I was walking, I was during lunch, and I was walking along at work, taking a walk, and I was talking to Becky in my head, and I said to her, you know, I really, really miss you. I love you. I said, I don't know what's going on with George. I said, you know, but he just doesn't, you know, doesn't return calls. He doesn't return emails. And I said, you know, another thing, Becky, is I wish I'd had the presence of mind like you did to copy all our emails. I would have loved to have had them, but I'm just so disorganized. You know, I'm so sorry I don't have them. I should have thought. So anyway, I said this, and I had this little thought to her. And when I got home, there was an email from George. And he wrote about how he had been going through her email. She wouldn't go through mine because he wanted to respect my privacy. But he said he was trying to figure out the trajectory of her illness. And he said, and it's so clear to me from her emails to you how much she loved you. And he quoted one of her emails. And then he said, and you know, I'm done with these now. I'm going to send these to you. I'm going to send all the,
aww.
You know. So, and I felt like Becky had something to do with this. I really got that feeling. It was just so odd for months, nothing. And then I'd say those things to her, and then boom.
It sounds like it did have. There was some kind of correlation there. And I often wonder that. I mean, I lost my mother, you know, in middle age just a few years ago. I was, I mean, more fortunate, you know, less fortunate than some, but more fortunate than others like you who lost at an age. And sometimes I'll just, you know, I'll be in the car by myself and I'll say something out loud to her or think something, and I'm thinking that like I get a telepathic reply, but then I say, oh, I'm just imagining things, you know, but maybe they are listening, you know, and maybe they do get back to us and let us know in one way or the other. And I think that's what happened in your situation.
Yeah, I like to think so, and I really felt it at the time. It was just so odd. So those are my stories.
Well, thank you so much for being a part of the campfire tonight. I know you're a longtime supporter, and I appreciate it. And thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Have a good evening. Thank you.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by HelloFresh.com, and we thank them for their support of the program. HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. And I enjoy it, my family enjoys it, and I think you will enjoy it as well. Each week, HelloFresh creates new delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions, and each recipe is designed to take around 30 minutes to make in your kitchen. Now, the recipes are set up in such a way that anyone, including even me, yeah, hard to believe, but true, can make a delicious and nutritious home-cooked meal in 30 minutes, whether you usually cook for yourself or you're not as comfortable in the kitchen making home-cooked meals. And the recipes are great, but so are the ingredients because they are the freshest ingredients. They're measured to the exact quantities needed, so there's no food waste. And what I like, no guesswork. And everything, best of all, is delivered to your doorstep in a special insulated box. Now, I've teamed up with HelloFresh, and they're offering everyone in our audience $35 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code CAMPFIRE35. Now, I've really enjoyed the meals HelloFresh sends to me, and just had one the other night. It was great. It was a beefed up bolognese. Delicious stuff. You're really going to enjoy it. I know my family enjoys it, and I enjoy it. And I like to tell you about things that I really use and I really enjoy, and this is one of those things. That's HelloFresh. So go over to HelloFresh.com and use the code CAMPFIRE35 to get $35 off your first week of deliveries. You'll enjoy it. I know I do. That's HelloFresh. Thanks, HelloFresh. Jim here, and over in the virtual campfire group, and you should check that out over on Facebook. It's absolutely free, and it's a great place, and we're almost at 10,000 members. It's Jim Harold's virtual campfire, and people share their supernatural stories over there. So check that out if you haven't done that. You'll love it. And you can find the link right at jimharold.com, so it's real easy to find. But anyhow, people were asking, Jim, have you ever had your own experiences? And I've talked about these on the shows years ago, but I have to remember we started the show in 2009. It's now 2017, so a lot of people haven't heard the back catalog. So what I thought I would do is just kind of relate one of my experiences. And it might not be the most dramatic. It might not be a shadow person. But I'll just tell you something that happened to me and how I think that it was kind of supernatural. Well, my brother was autistic, and he loved all kinds of music. He loved everything from, if you're old enough to remember, Soul Train with Don Cornelius, to classic country music, to, of all things, Lawrence Welk, if you remember him. Maybe you know the name from the SNL skits that have been done over the last several years. Anyhow, he was very eclectic in his musical taste. Well, unfortunately, he passed unexpectedly in 1999, and he was only, he would have been 27 years old. And I had been married for a couple of years, and my wife and I went down south to the funeral, and everybody was distraught. This was unexpected, very young. He had a tough life anyway, being autistic, and he wasn't kind of like autistic like Rain Man. He was kind of lower level functioning. So it was a tough life for him. And it was very hard on my parents. He stayed with my parents their whole lives. Was not institutionalized or anything like that. They were dedicated to taking care of him. Maybe so much so that they didn't make him as independent as maybe he could have been, but their heart was certainly in the right place. And you have to remember, when he was born in the 70s, there were no real therapies for autism. It was very misunderstood. And I'm so glad to see today that that has changed, and there's a lot more knowledge of that particular situation. So anyway, my wife and I are driving back from this funeral, and we're flipping through the stations, and this is before Spotify or MP3 players or smartphones or anything like that. So we're listening to good old radio, and we're flipping through the channels, and we come to what they used to call Music of Your Life. I don't think they even have many of these stations anymore, seeing that this was almost 20 years ago. But it was where you would hear Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, people like that. And this was in a rural area in southern Ohio, so you really didn't pick up a lot of stations great. And I thought, hey, I like some of this music. Let's take a listen. Try to take our mind off of the events over the last few days. So anyway, I hear an instrumental. And they don't announce it. They just start playing. And it's like, my gosh, that sounds familiar. I've heard that before, but I can't place it. And I'm usually really good with the kind of era of music. If it's Glenn Miller or something like that, I'd be able to ID it. But I wasn't in this case. So anyway, on the back announce, I got quite the chill down my spine. The announcer said, of course, that was Lawrence Welk's hit from 1960, Calcutta. Now, I mentioned my brother liked Lawrence Welk. My brother didn't like Lawrence Welk. For whatever reason, my brother loved Lawrence Welk. Now, it was still in syndication when we were little kids, and then it went on to PBS. And pretty much up until the time he passed, he watched it religiously anytime it was on PBS. He just loved Lawrence Welk. And if there was one artist that A, was incredibly obscure, and B, I would connect with him, it would be Lawrence Welk. And in my view, my brother was saying, hey, big brother, I'm okay. Don't worry about me. I'm up here listening to Champagne Music by Lawrence Welk. So we really do think that that was my brother reaching out. Now, some people may say it's a coincidence, and that's okay. But I think it was real. And I think it was my brother, again, saying, I love you, and I'm okay. And it was very reassuring, and it's emotional for me. So I hope you enjoyed that campfire story. From time to time, I might be telling you a couple more. And I think people say they want to hear from me and hear a little bit more from me and my opinions about things. So maybe occasionally I'll do a little segment on the campfire like that. Let me know if you like it. And now to the next great campfire story. Ashley is a new listener. She found us on Spotify in October, I'm guessing around Halloween time. And she's had some spookiness of her own. And she's going to tell us about a haunted vacation. Ashley, welcome to the program and tell us about this.
Hi. Yes. So my best friend and I decided to take a haunted vacation. And we went down for a long weekend in Savannah, Georgia. And we kind of went like the whole nine yards. We like borrowed ghost hunting gear. We stayed in the 1790 hotel in their haunted room. Ate at haunted restaurants, took ghost tours, did the whole kind of nine yards. So we were, we had a couple pieces of like three big pieces of evidence that we got to experience. The first was we were sitting in the square across from 432 Abercorn. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the kind of more noteworthy houses in Savannah. It was 1 a.m. in the morning, and we have all our ghost gear out. And we're sitting on a bench, and these three drunk girls walk into the square, and they go to the house. While we were watching them pass, we stopped recording so that we could appear to be as normal as possible. we watched them go to the house, kind of scream and yell and bang on the windows and just be overall kind of obnoxious. Right. Finally, they moved on. They turned the corner, and so we pulled out our gear, and we started recording again. Now, the reason that they are significant is because about 10 seconds into the video we were recording, you can hear a whisper say, I didn't like the drunk girl.
Oh, my.
Yeah. yeah, that was that. And the other two cool things happened at the Sorrel Weed House. So there's this really great paranormal investigation tour that they do at midnight. I highly recommend it. It's a lot of fun. We were in the basement. It was pitch black. We had just gotten down there. And I'm standing facing my friend when someone takes a picture. So there's a camera flash, and standing behind my friend is a shadow, and It's standing upright. It's about a foot taller than her, and it's probably no more than half a foot behind her.
Wow.
So like a good friend, I squealed and I jumped away from her. And I tried to get a picture or flash or light or something as soon as possible. And by the time I did, there was nothing to be seen. But the cool thing about this is immediately afterwards, the tour guide gathered everyone around to tell us about the basement. And literally the first thing out of his mouth is that there have been reports of shadow people.
Ooh.
Down in the basement. So I couldn't even speak. I was so flabbergasted. I couldn't even articulate what I had just seen.
Right.
but it was definitely really cool. And the last thing that we saw, was still at the Sorrel Weed House. It was at the second floor of the carriage house, which was the former slave quarter. So it's basically one large room with a small room towards the back.
Mm-hmm.
And that room belonged to one slave in particular. And there was like a scandal with her, and she was found hanging in her room, more than likely murdered.
So we did get to explore around a little bit. But right before we left, I was the last one to leave, and I stopped at the top of the stairs, and I turned to take one last picture of the upstairs of this carriage house. And in that picture, you can see a tall silhouette of a woman in a long period gown blocking the majority of the doorway to that back room. And I saw nothing with my eyes, but only in the picture. And so I did get a friend to kind of touch that up, and you can see her pretty well. It's pretty cool. So I don't know if you realize that there's like a second part to my story, though.
Okay, go ahead.
This is about the ghost that followed me home.
Oh boy, here we go.
So I came home kind of thinking that was the end of my vacation, a few cool stories, the end. But at this point, I'd been living in the apartment where I was staying for about 2 years. And I'd never noticed anything, never felt nervous, except for maybe after watching a scary movie, nothing big, you know. But I started to notice strange noises, sights out of the corner of my eye. I would hear, like, on occasion, more than one occasion, dishes going crashing down. But nothing broke. Nothing was out of place. It was kind of bizarre. But it was all easily explained away. 2 weeks after our vacation was Halloween, and we had some friends over to watch movies. So we're all like gathering, prepping food, getting drinks ready. And the topic of my supposed ghost comes up, and I'm only like half believing it as I'm explaining it to my friends. And during this conversation, not before, not after, literally right in the midst of it, a very large and expensive frame in the adjoining room comes crashing down. So we were all pretty spooked by that. But that's only one of the things that kind of happened. And this was over the course of several months after we got home. Yeah. So at my mom's house, and you would think my mom's house is not my house, that'd be kind of weird. But I do have a younger brother, and he has autism, and he's kind of like the poster boy of autism. So he doesn't talk, and he seems to pick up on a lot of things that I think people don't want to give him credit for, you know.
Right. And by the way, my brother was autistic.
Oh really? Okay.
Yeah, so I'm very familiar with that, and I would think that would make sense that autistic children are more sensitive to me, because they seem to process things differently. So maybe one of the things is that they're more sensitive to things.
Right, and I honestly could probably call back with more stories about him and his twin sister, because she has autism too. so they've got probably like a good group of stories just about things that they've kind of reacted to. We're sitting on the couch at my mom's house, and I'm sitting to the right, and there's nothing behind me but the corner and the floor lamp. And while we're sitting there, he keeps looking past me, like kind of around me, and he's laughing and he's looking up, and it's always in the same spot, and he's shaking his head no sometimes. And this first time, I kind of teased him. I was like, dude, you're freaking me out. What are you looking at? And then every time I visited and I was sitting in that spot, he did the same thing. And we also met my infant nephew doing the same thing. So it was kind of weird. But my mom, she rearranges the furniture a lot. So when she rearranged the furniture, couch was in a different position for a few months, nothing happened. We all more or less forgot about it. And then when she rearranged again and the couch found its way in that same spot, the same thing right in that corner. So that's, it was odd. But the pivotal moment for me about this haunting, I guess, was I have these reoccurring dreams, and that also could probably be another phone call. I've had them since I was like maybe my like early teens, but they're always really similar. They're always the room I'm sleeping in. There's always a figure in the corner, in the doorway, somewhere. I'm always unable to scream, speak, or move, and I will wake up and then fall right back in this dream. So what's truly terrifying about them is that I end up not knowing what's real and what's not, mm-hmm. and I can't seem to escape it. So one night I was sleeping and I had this dream. I'm in my room. There's a figure on the corner And it takes a step forward. And so I start panicking. I can't move. I can't speak. I can't anything. And it takes another step forward. And I continue to panic. And then there's one more step. And it splits into three figures on this last step. And that's when I wake up. And I'm waking up, I'm hearing myself audibly say, "Go away."
Yeah, it was really weird. So at this point, I'm like, all right, something's going on, and I believe it. Because this is months later. And I go to my friend, who I tease for being a hippie. And I'm like, what do I do? This is crazy. And she tells me to get a crystal and put it on like a chain. And she tells me to use it to communicate with the spirit. And she tells me how. So she makes me one, and it tells me to put it in my bed and or put it on my pillow, make it my own. And I'm like, yeah, sure. All right. Okay. And I don't believe her at all. But the curiosity gets the better of me. And so one night, a couple weeks later, I pull it out and I'm sitting on my bed alone. And, I hold it still and I say, show me yes. And it starts to go in a clockwise circle. Okay. Show me no. And it starts to swing left and right. So I set it down completely, give it a minute. And then I hold it again. Show me yes. Show me no. And it does the same things. So it's like, all right, that, passed two trials. Let's just say this works. And I proceeded to ask it questions. Now me being like a skeptic, but also a believer, a reluctant believer, I asked the questions, but I also asked it the same questions in different orders with different phrasing over and over and over again. So essentially the conversation I had, the answers that I got was, is there a spirit here? Yes. Have you always been here? No. Did you follow me from Savannah? Yes. was that you in my dream? Yes. Well, that dream really scared me. Did you mean any harm? No. Do you mean me any harm at all? No. Was that you at my mom's? Yes. Do you like being around the kids? Yes. and then I asked it, I kind of talked to it a little bit, and I said, well, you know, we're planning on moving soon. Are you going to stay here when we move? No. Are you going to go back to Savannah? No. I almost paused to ask this last question. I'm like, are you trying to come with us? Yes. Yeah. And so essentially I'm like, well, I don't want you to. and after that conversation, like I asked other questions and things about life and, you know, all kinds of stuff and tried to really see what I could get out of this conversation. But after that, things like completely died down. I had like maybe on occasion, like the feeling that there was something else there, but I mean, that's, who knows if that was just in my head or not, you know, but that, that's my story and the ghost that came home with me. And, we did move and, I haven't noticed much of anything, here. I've had two occasions where someone said they heard someone walking down the stairs and there was nobody else there, but other than that, nothing in the new place.
Well, quite a lot going on there, Ashley. I really appreciate your time tonight, and I wish you the best with everything. And hopefully nothing too nasty bothers you any further. My goodness.
Yeah, right. Well, thank you so much.
Gabby from Chicago is on the line, and she's a new listener, started listening to us in October when we were featured on iTunes. Thank you, iTunes. And she has a story, about her grandparents' house in Mexico. Gabby, welcome to the program, and tell us what happened.
Hi, it's a pleasure being here. So before I get to my story, there's a quick background information about my grandparents' house.
Okay.
So it's a very old house in Mexico. Very old. My mom grew up there with my aunts and my uncles, and they've always told me stories about how when they were little, they experienced some strange things. You know, they never said it was haunted, but they just said strange things. For example, my mom says that back when they were little, the house was smaller. Now it has a lot of additions to it. They would all be sleeping in the back room of the house, the farthest room. and it would be very dark, and they would see like a white light, like almost like a star twinkling in the room, and it would just move around the room. That would cause them to be, you know, concerned, scared. But my grandparents were very, very traditional, didn't believe in that, and they kind of ignored them. There's also stories about how my mom, one time when she was getting home from work late, you know, she was a teen, she saw, my grandparents have this old well, and she saw what she says were devil's hooves hanging from the well. They're glowing red.
Oh, my goodness.
My mom swears by this. So we have all these stories my grandparents, my aunt and uncles and have told us, and the one that really sticks out, and which is really related to my story, is that the farthest room in the house, that back bedroom, my aunt says when she was in her late 20s, she was in Mexico taking care of my grandma who was sick, and there was this lady that helped them clean the house and cook, but they were both in the back of the house in this bedroom, and they were in the bathroom that was, you know, located inside this bedroom. Mm-hmm. And my aunt and this lady were talking as she was cleaning, and then my aunt says, okay, you know, I'm going to go to the kitchen and take care of dinner. So the lady's cleaning, and then she comes back. And then a few minutes later, comes back to the kitchen and asks my aunt, so Betty, did you find what you were looking for? And my aunt looks at her confused. And she says, yeah, you were in the bedroom just now, opening up drawers, and you were mumbling something. It sounds like you were looking for something. Did you find it? And my aunt says, no, I've been in here the whole time in the kitchen. So it just sounds like something, a spirit, something took my aunt's voice and was kind of talking to this lady that was cleaning. So that story always scared me. So,
well, I want to say real quick. I wanted to mention one thing, you know, and this is something when I started this show, I didn't even know was, I've heard of doppelgangers, but I never thought of it necessarily as supernatural. I didn't think we'd hear as much about it, but we've had quite a few doppelganger stories similar to that, where the person say, hey, I just saw you over here. It's like, I wasn't over here. So it makes me wonder, but go ahead. I just wanted to share that.
I'll have to look into that. It's kind of creepy now. But yeah, so back in 2003, I was 23 years old. I was vacationing in Mexico with my parents, and the house was full of family members. And we were the lucky ones. We were staying in this back bedroom. It's a big bedroom. My parents were in this queen bed. My brother was in another one. I chose a small little twin bed against the wall. You know, I was kind of creeped out, so I wanted to be kind of close to the wall. And I remember it was nighttime. You know, we turned the lights off, and I made sure that bathroom in front of me, the doors were closed. There was these big blue iron doors, and I closed them because I was creeped out. And I just started remembering those stories. They kept playing back in my head, and I told myself, do not fall asleep. Do not fall asleep. And that was my plan, to not fall asleep, wait until, you know, the sun came up. And in our small town in Mexico, every strike of the hour, you know, the church bells will ring. And there are these really old, creepy bells. So here I am in my bed, looking at my phone, looking at pictures, waiting for time to pass. The 1 o'clock bell rings. It's like ding, ding, very old bells. 2 o'clock, the bells ring. And at this point, I'm just really tired, but I'm not going to fall asleep. I'm kind of between being awake and sleeping, but mostly awake. And the 3 o'clock bell rings. And I remember looking towards that bathroom with the metal door that I had closed. And now at this point, there was like a dim light in there. The doors were open. There was a dim light. And inside was my grandpa. And I was creeped out because my grandpa, you know, he was in the house, but he was sleeping on the other end of the house in his bedroom. So I was kind of looking inside and kind of confused. I wasn't scared, but confused as to why my grandpa was in the bathroom. And he was looking in the mirror, like kind of looking at himself side to side, looking at his cheeks. And what seemed weird was he was dressed all in black, a black leather jacket, black pants, cowboy boots, a black hat too, cowboy hat. And then I kept staring at him. I kept staring at him. And I remember he turned around to look at me. This is where it scared me, because the stare, the way he looked at me, it was just very strange. It wasn't my grandpa's stare. It just felt like something else, like someone else. And then that really scared me. I remember I screamed and I ran to my mom's bed, almost crying. This is a 23-year-old girl. I'm like, Mom, Mom. She turns the lights on. She's like, you're crazy. Go back to bed. The bathroom doors were open. It gives me goosebumps right now. But they were open, and I remember closing them. So the lights go off. I go back to bed. Ooh. And this is around almost like 4 o'clock. It's still dark. And I'm like, you know, I'm definitely not going to bed now. I'm more awake than ever. So I'm on my phone looking at pictures from back home and trying to wait for the sun to come out. And then I feel like a cold, like little air in my right ear. There's nothing there, just the wall. And I hear the words, Venaki, Venaki. And that's come here in Spanish.
Okay.
And that really scared me because I felt the cold air, and I felt like someone right next to my ear saying, come here in Spanish. And it wasn't my grandpa's voice. It was something else. And now thinking about it, I feel like it was something trying to lure me into the bathroom, because I feel like, obviously it wasn't my grandpa, but I feel like something used my grandpa's image to make me feel like kind of like comfortable to get out of bed.
Right.
And then the voice saying, come here. It's like, it definitely something wanting me to come into that bathroom. And again, to my previous story, that's the same bathroom that cleaning lady was in. And then she heard my aunt moving around, you know, in the bedroom looking for something in the drawers. So I don't know what it is. Ghost. I don't think it's an evil spirit. I mean, I don't know why there would be one, but you know, to this day, we can't explain. And there's many more things that have happened recently. I mean, September, when my grandpa passed away, other strange things happened then. So I don't know.
That is strange. And you say that other people in your family have experienced things in that house as well.
Yes. Yeah. My aunt, my mom, like every single member of my family. Absolutely. And then recently when my grandpa died, I mean, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this, Jim, but are you familiar with what they say? Like when someone dies, they pick up their steps. Have you heard of that?
No, I haven't.
Well, they pretty much say that when a person, the last few seconds before a person dies, that they quickly visit all the places that were important to them when they were alive.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, so, I mean, in that house, my grandpa was in his bedroom, you know, almost close to passing away, and these two ladies are taking care of him when we're in the kitchen, and there's, like, a view in the kitchen of the laundry room, and they swear they saw someone in a tall cowboy hat walk by, and they heard doors closing, and my grandpa loved his house. He always locked the doors before going to bed, opened them up in the morning. And they swear that's my grandfather was closing the doors of his house that he loves so much.
Wow.
So well, that house has something.
It sounds like it does. Well, Gabby, thank you for sharing your experience on the campfire.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I hope that you enjoyed that campfire as much as I did. And I hope that you'll take to heart the words that I said at the beginning of the show. You know, we are competing. Believe it or not, we are competing in a crowded marketplace these days with podcasts. And I see a day when it's going to become harder and harder for the independent podcaster to stand out. I want to be one of those left standing. And one way we can make that happen is if our audience so overwhelmingly rates and reviews us and subscribes to the podcast and spreads the word and tells other people. I really feel that it's very important for the survival of what we do, because I am afraid that we are going to come to the day when the independent podcaster is pushed out. And I hope that I can survive. You know, I worked in traditional radio, and I saw this happen in traditional radio. And these big companies came in, they took everything over, and then they ruined radio. And I don't want to see them do the same thing to podcasting. So not only for me, but for all of your favorite independent podcasters, I think that it's crucial that you make sure you rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast if you value what we do. And I think based on the response I get every day from this show, you do value what we do here at the Campfire. So whether you're a Plus member or anything, the most important thing I can ask of you is to rate and review us and subscribe. That will keep the campfire burning brightly. We thank you so much. We'll talk to you next time on The Campfire. And as always, stay spooky. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Jim Harold's Campfire. Tune in again next time for more stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things.